Good evening,
Andy
everybody.
And Durahan. Oh, under the radar. Okay.
Is this the way the whole season's going to go, David?
Well, you just have to admire good work when you see it. I mean, that's all it is. Is there anything wrong? You're not suggesting I take things too far, are you?
Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined down below by John Slica, off to my side here by the idiot with the blue shark and the big giant eyes.
How am I an idiot?
This is one of our final, not quite our last, but this is one of our last preseason 2018-19 podcasts where we are going to preview 22 conferences in a single podcast all at the same time. Correct, David?
Yeah, and we're going to spend 20-25 minutes on each one, so we're going to be here a while.
Except we're doing about 5 hours on the MEAC this year, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes. So just go make yourself something to eat, sit back, relax, and we're going to be on for a while. Well, maybe not.
Live on tape delay.
This is our Under the Radar podcast. By Under the Radar, we mean the 22 conferences that are not normally multi-bid conferences. Some of them might get multiple bids this year. Some of them have gotten multiple bids in the past. But generally, these are conferences that put one and only one team in.
Yes.
What are the 10 conferences that we are not going to be discussing tonight?
Those would be the 10 conferences that have already had their own podcasts, whether it's the Power 5 plus the Big East, along with the American, the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, and the West Coast conferences.
Yes, and most importantly, David, your friend Handy is in one of those conferences, so he does not get discussed tonight.
Oh, we're not discussing Handy and Durahan tonight?
No.
He's a very good strength and conditioning coach.
But what we're going to do, though, we're going to go through each of these conferences tonight in alphabetical order. We're going to be asking the question of who do we think is going to win the conference. And the second question that we're going to ask for each of these conferences is, should the top team or teams in this conference get upset in the conference tournament, is the top team worthy of being on the bubble, worthy of consideration for an at-large bid? Or even if there's multiple teams that might be worthy of an at-large bid from these conferences. But most of usually we talk about who's going to win the league. And David, are you ready?
I think so. I'm not, but when has that ever stopped me before? Let's go.
All right. Well, let's go. Let's start things off in the American East.
I look amazing on television. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how great I look?
You'll look even more amazing in the puppet bunker next Tuesday.
No, we're not doing that this year. We're not doing that.
John, I'm going to start off with you in the America East, which produced the story of the year last year when UMBC captured the automatic bid with a huge upset at Vermont, and then more importantly, became the first 16 seed to ever beat a one seed when they knocked off Virginia in the NCAA tournament. Here's the question. Is UMBC going to be back in the big dance this year?
It's going to be hard to be assured of a repeat with guys like Jairus Lyles graduating. But the ironic thing about the America East, there was another team we were expecting that was going to be a noisemaker that UMBC actually knocked out with a last-second three-pointer in the America East Championship, and that was the Catamounts of Vermont. However, they, too, are also going to lose a bunch of players to graduation. So while Vermont and UMBC may be looking at a two-team race, there is another team that Chad's high on that might be a third wheel out of there.
Yeah, and David, six seniors back for a team that's never made the NCAA tournament before, but the Hartford Hawks, could this be the year they finally break through?
Potentially, but I don't think so. I mean, I think they're going to have a year that's certainly better than what we're seeing, but I really like UMBC this year. Odom has done a fantastic job there. I'm glad that he's still there. I don't think UMBC is inside the bubble. I don't like them as much as I liked Vermont going in the last season, but I just think when you look at what most of the teams in this conference are bringing back versus what they lost, with the exception of Hartford, they just seem to be better than everyone else. And I still think they're better than Hartford because, well, they were better than Hartford last year. The other thing about this UMBC program, we harped on this last year, but it bears repeating. The 16 seed win over Virginia was massive, but we were pretty impressed with them before that. We didn't think they were going to win the conference tournament, but this was one of the 10 worst teams in all of Division I over a 3 or 4 year stretch. And to go from that to what they did last year, even had they lost to Vermont, that still would have been a really impressive turnaround. Now, the fact that they beat Vermont is great, and the fact that they beat Virginia was over the top. But this is a program that's come very far very fast.
It has, and I give them credit for that. I have a feeling about this Hartford team this year. That's all I've got to say. And they are my pick. Obviously, I don't think anybody's within the inside the bubble in this conference or the next conference that we're going to discuss, which is the Atlantic Sun, one of our favorite conferences here on the Under the Radar year in and year out.
Yep.
A little bit of change, though, in the conference this year. John, as South Carolina Upstate is gone, having traded conferences basically with Liberty, Liberty coming in from the Big South, Upstate off to the Big South, and on top of that, North Alabama joining the conference as one of our two new members to D1.
I don't think we're going to be looking for too much of a splash from North Alabama in the next year or two, but Liberty certainly has the potential to be a noisemaker. I believe they were runner-up in the Big South the year before, but right now with Gulf Coast also going to be doing a little bit of retooling after Dooley left to take the ECU job, it's probably going to be Lipscomb or bust for the Atlantic Sun this year.
Yeah, Liberty won 22 games last year and does bring four starters back. Lipscomb won 23 games and brings all five starters back, though.
Yeah, I like this Lipscomb team. We liked them last year as well. And they got it started pretty early. They had the two big wins over Belmont out of conference, and again, were the conference winners last year. I don't see how you can go against a team that brings everybody back after winning it a year ago. Although Liberty, like you said, won 22 games in a conference that was arguably maybe a little bit better than what the Ace Sun typically is. But I still like this Lipscomb team. And while I don't think they're going to land inside the bubble, I do think that they're going to be pretty viable.
There's a couple of two other teams that I am keeping an eye on this conference, both North Florida and NJIT, the original Hoops HD team of the people.
Yes, they were.
NJIT, four starters back, and Abdul Lewis is a guy that actually tested the NBA draft waters. So keep an eye on both those teams this season to make a little bit of noise, although I agree that Lipscomb is the best team in the league. Not inside the bubble, though. Not that good. John, the Big Sky Conference, is it going to be the same thing as always in this league?
Well, there have been a couple of years where we've somewhat deviated from teams like Montana and Weber State, but this year I'd probably see Montana going to have the inside track as far as winning the conference.
David, do you agree? Someone else.
I like Montana, and I like Weber State. Typically. But, again, teams that aren't Montana and Weber State, there just seems to be a big drop-off after that. Eastern Washington's typically pretty good, and I know that you ranked them third this year, and I guess that makes as much sense as anybody. But I actually really like this Montana team. Not quite inside the bubble liking them, but again, they could – I don't think they're on the 16 line either. I think they're in the 13-14 range.
Now, there was a team outside of that group of three that actually won the CIT last year, and that's Northern Colorado. I don't remember offhand what they're going to be returning, so I don't see them jumping to the top of the conference this year at least.
Well, Andre Spite has gone from Northern Colorado. He averaged over 22 points a game, but the next two best players are back. And a little fun fact there, Northern Colorado, only Big Sky team to ever win a postseason tournament other than the Big Sky tournament. What was Northern Colorado last year with that CIT championship? So they've got that leg up over Montana or Weber State.
Yeah, but they're not as good as Montana.
No. Yeah, and I'm picking Montana also.
And Montana... I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if they appeared in our preseason top 10. They're pretty good.
They could. Yeah. They could. Well, that'll be coming up towards the end of the show. We do have a preseason top 10 that David and I voted on. John, we excluded you because I didn't tell you we were voting. So, on that note, let's go over to the Big South. We already mentioned it already that South Carolina Upstate is coming over. Liberty is gone. An additional new addition. Does that make any sense?
Good
David.
Verbiage there, right Hampton. There.
Yeah. Hampton English also coming over. From the there we go. So two new teams in the Big South this year. Hampton, and Upstate. What are your thoughts about the conference?
Not too strong. I think it's hovering around the 15-16 line. I do like the Big South, and I like that they fixed their season. It's always fun to watch. It seemed like for 2 or 3 years in a row, we would be into the second half of conference play, and the eighth place team and the second place team would be separated by like one game. And now that this tournament's at the home floor of the first place team, it makes it even that much more exciting. Radford, they won it last year, and I think you picked them to win this year. At least that's, I think you did, and I think that's the right pick. I like Radford in the league, but I don't think, you know, in terms of teams we're going to see in our top 10, I don't think we have anybody from this league.
But also keep an eye on the Campbell Camels and the nation's top scorer and Chris Clemens, who's going to be coming back to Buies Creek for one final season.
Yeah, I wanted to cue this up when we talked about Campbell. We had one of the greatest names ever. Neither one of you have that on the – it's from their exhibition game. You know what I'm talking about?
No idea what you're talking about, Dave.
God, Stalika, can you find that? We'll come back to that. I can't right now. I don't have any
on. We may be going to that for a final thought.
Okay, make that the final thought. Okay.
All right, but anyhow, now that we've confused everybody and lost them all, Chris Clemens.
It's better than him God Sham God. It is the greatest name I've ever seen. It's not a Campbell player, though.
But keep an eye on Chris Clemens again this year. Campbell may not be in our under-the-radar top 10, but Clemens would. If we do an under-the-radar top 10 players, Clemens would be probably number 2 or 3 on that list.
Right,
Very exciting player to watch. I'm also keeping an eye on Hampton in this conference, though. I think that they could challenge, although it is a step up from the MEAC to the Big South. There's very few conferences that you step up to when you go into the Big South, but it is a step up for them, I think.
Yeah.
David, a team I know you like is out there in the Big West. I think you're very high on one team out there.
UC Irvine, like them a lot. You know, they return all 5 starters from a team that had quite a bit of success last year. The Big West was improved. Like, up until 2 years ago, we were used to seeing this team 12, 13-ish, at least in the years where the best team was able to win the conference tournament. It kind of dipped the last couple years, but I think it might be back this year. I think it might be at the top of its talent cycle again, but I really like this, the Anteaters, the Eaters, baby. They've got, probably the best player in the conference, and Christian are one of the best. They've got all 5 starters back, and I think they're going to make quite a bit of noise.
Yeah, all 5 starters back. Redshirt freshman Colin Welp, keep an eye on him as well. Although Cal State Fullerton has most of their key players back as well, Stalika, and they did win the Big West tournament last year.
Yeah, they were actually, I think, second place in the regular season, but they were pretty much a contender all season long and ended up bowing out in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Although, honestly, I thought Chad was going to go a little further south to Cal State Northridge, who, it turns out, is going to have a very experienced coaching staff debuting this year.
That's one way of putting it. We'll go with experience. There's other adjectives you could use with that coaching staff. But experience certainly works.
Yeah, Mark Godfrey, the new head coach at Cal State Northridge. So
Jim,
we'll keep an eye on what he does. Although, could it be worse than the Reggie Theus era there? So,
Probably not. Reggie Theus, real shocking in general. I was really a big fan of his at New Mexico State. Thought he did a great job. And then he gets out there and did not do a great job.
Although, it looks like our colleague John Titel has been busy interviewing just about everyone on their coaching
staff.
I think
he's moving out there, John Titel, moving out to Northridge.
Whether it's Jim Herrick or Mo Williams.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn over to the Colonial. This is year in and year out a conference that we do talk about in terms of bubbles, and talk about a first place finisher maybe being on the bubble should they slip up in the conference tournament. So, David, let me throw this question to you. Who do you think wins the Colonial this year, and can that team be on the bubble?
Northeastern is who I like better than just about anyone else. I mean, there's some other good teams in here, but it just seems like that they're, based on what they have coming back versus how good they were last year, and they were good last year, should be better this year. I'm not going to predict that they're going to be inside the bubble, but they're certainly capable of it. I mean, we'll have to see what they do in that first 6-week period out of conference, but they're a good team. I like them a lot.
Yeah. And last year was a overtime loss in the conference tournament championship at Charleston to Charleston. Right. And Charleston then gave Auburn a good first round game, I think, in the NCAA tournament as well. Yeah. So
not as good of a game as what Clemson gave Auburn, but still a good game.
Sleeka, how about the Tribe? We talked every year about William & Mary's. This year they finally get off of that list that Northwestern broke off of a couple of years ago of teams that have been in the NCAA since the inception of Division I and never made the tournament. Do you think the Tribe may have a shot at the first place for this year?
You could probably say it's been somewhat remarkable that they've at least been in the top half of the Colonial, what it seems, the past 5 to 10 seasons without putting together one run, but probably not going to be able to overcome either Northeastern or Charleston this year. But another dark horse I'm keeping an eye on is Wilmington with, I think it's Levante Kaycock as their top returning player.
Yeah, Devonta. They don't have much else that's top or returning, but he is a good player.
Well, I've got to throw out there, William & Mary actually led the entire nation in three-point shooting last year, so they can get hot. And if they do get hot, especially in three games in March in the conference tournament, I think this is a team that you should really keep an eye on. But I do agree with David that Northeastern is the pick to win the league at the end of the day.
Yeah, and what a story it would be if Northeastern's inside the bubble and Bill and Murray beats him in the conference tournament. That would be kind of fun.
Well, yeah, and Northeastern could be. Well, Sleeka, do you have Northeastern's schedule? You are a schedule expert. Do they have a chance to be inside the bubble?
I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but
this is great.
You're fired. Get him off the air, goddammit.
Twice we've alluded to things we'd like to get on the screen, and twice we have failed. This is
Classic Hoops HD.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of pre-production meetings here.
That may also be a giveaway that of the four teams I actually did look at as far as their schedules, Northeastern is not one of them.
Okay. Well, let's just go on to get the Colonial. You're out, Northeastern.
Yeah.
Out of the tournament. Out of everything. No bid for you. Okay. Conference USA. David, Conference USA, this is a conference where we will be talking about a team inside the bubble because I think the best team in this conference will end up inside the bubble at the end of the year. You want to talk a little Hilltopper basketball?
Yeah. I mean, they just got – they're just soaked in talent. And another big recruiting class, Charles Bassey, is going to – I mean, he's going to destroy Conference USA is most likely what he's going to do. If you look at the top 25, Western Kentucky actually receiving votes already. They're not in the top 25, obviously. If they were, they'd be ineligible for this. But I do think they'll be inside the bubble. I do think they'll crack the rankings. And who knows how far inside they'll be. Is it possible they'll be wearing white? I mean, if they get out there and win 28-29, are they looking at a possible 8 seed or better? Can they even get in on the first ballot?
Now, this is a team that did give itself plenty of chances as far as the non-conference goes. They opened their season at Washington, so right off the bat, they're going to be
testing. That's a great, great game. I mean, that one I have circled.
They're also going to be in the Myrtle Beach Invitational on the safe half as Valparaiso, West Virginia, and Monmouth, and other notable games are going to be at Arkansas, at Belmont, and also a pair of home games against St. Mary's and Wisconsin before they go into Conference USA play.
Wisconsin is going to bowl.
David, I got a question though. When look at this Conference USA, is there a chance, even if Western Kentucky pulls the double, wins the regular season and the conference tournament, could this conference still get two bids? And in that regards, I'm talking about last year's conference tournament champion that had two 20-point scorers back, and the Marshall. What about them?
Well, my one hang up on Marshall, and you can't take away at all what they did last year, winning the conference tournament and then winning a game in the NCAA tournament. I believe that's 4 years in a row.
They beat Wichita State.
Yeah, they beat Wichita. Yeah. And I believe that's 4 years in a row. Conference USA, while not having any of these teams inside the bubble, has put teams inside the round of 32. But the one problem I have with Marshall is their defense, or lack thereof. I mean, it is just noticeably lacking. And as great as they are on the offensive side of the floor, they just don't even try to defend, it doesn't seem sometimes. But, you know, there with the curtain in what, in my opinion, was one of the greatest conference tournaments ever, with a curtain in the middle, they went down and won it. We liked Marshall last year, but all of last year we were talking about Middle Tennessee for most of the year. We thought they were on their way, it landing inside the bubble a year ago, and possibly Western Kentucky as well. So it was a little bit of surprise when Marshall won. But as you said, they've got their two leading scorers back. I think they'll be dangerous. If you want my opinion, Chad, and you know how this works, when you're in a league like this, you basically have 6 weeks at the beginning of the year to get the kinds of wins that will impress the committee. And then after doing that, if a team is fortunate enough to pick up a win or two, then they have to go the rest of the way without stubbing their toes. You don't get many strikes. I think Marshall's defense is too weak for them to win the 13-14 league games they have to get inside the bubble. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I just don't think they're going to go the distance.
Now, here's the kicker for Conference USA this year. This is actually going to be the first year where they're going to be adopting flex scheduling. So for the first 14 games of Conference USA, they're going to play everyone plus their typical travel partner. So the final four games in conference play are actually going to be determined by the order of finish through the first 14 games.
And that's a direct result of their deputy commissioner, I believe, being on the selection committee.
There's a couple other teams I want to keep a look eye on here, including Old Dominion this year, and David, Southern Miss.
Yeah.
What a job has that he's done there, getting this team out of the complete and utter toilet into serious respectability here.
You can't overstate how big of a mess Southern Miss was when Doc Sadler arrived, and drastic improvements, and they really have something this year. And aside, like, it's similar to what Pat Scarry has done at Towson, albeit Towson looks pretty bad this year, but still some pretty big years after being in a big mess. That's about as big as the mess was at Southern Miss, wouldn't you agree? And he's done very well.
I would, and, you know, I mean, I think the big breakthrough last year when they knocked off Middle Tennessee in the CUSA tournament, did they not?
Yes, they did.
And that's what knocked Middle Tennessee out of the NCAA tournament. And I've got them picked third or fourth in the conference this year, and that because I think Western Kentucky is that good. But don't be surprised to see them make a little noise here and there during the course of the season. John, I know you're a Cincinnati guy. Let's talk a little Horizon League, though. How about the budding Horizon League rivalry between Wright State and Northern Kentucky?
Yeah, Wright State and Northern Kentucky have been selected to finish 1-2 respectively. It was actually 2 years ago where NKU got the automatic bid, and last year they ended up winning the regular season title but actually faltered early in the conference tournament, which actually opened the door for Wright State to get the auto bid last year. Wright State is actually going to have quite a few returning pieces. Not Grant Benzinger, but Loudon Love and a bunch of other guys should also keep the Raiders top of conference.
I agree with that pick. I outside shot it maybe getting on the bubble, but last year Wright State, while they didn't finish first, they beat everybody in the league away from home, I think, which is pretty remarkable. You know, not all of them were true road games, but still to go out there and beat everybody away from home, or all but one of them away from home, and to do that with four starters coming back. They won 26 a year ago. They're going to be even better this year, I think. I think at the end of the year, and we may already be to that point now, it's not a budding rivalry. I think Wright State NKU is a rivalry, and it's going to be one of the more fun under the radar rivalries.
They were rivals even back in their Division II days.
Yeah, which I guess I can't really speak to that, but it makes sense that they were.
keep an eye on Drew McDonald over there for Northern Kentucky. He's their top player, in my opinion. And so there's a couple of There's some very good players. I think it's going to be two very good games when they play each other during the regular season, maybe three if they meet again in the conference tournament. So
yeah,
keep an eye on that. This should be a fun league at the top of the horizon. But, David, I got to talk to you about the bottom of the horizon league very briefly.
Okay, yeah.
We have a new head coach at Detroit.
The head coach at Detroit, Mike Davis, who has not been good, but I wouldn't say he's been bad either anywhere he's been. I mean, he wasn't bad at UAB. I think he wasn't as good as what we were expecting. He certainly had a couple decent years at Indiana. But at Texas Southern, I thought he had a really good situation going. I was really shocked by the hire, shocked that they wanted him, A, and B, shocked that he wanted to go there. It just seemed kind of bizarre. Now, I certainly wish him the best, but unusual choice on both ends. I was kind of surprised in general.
It was a bit of a surprising move. I mean, he does have the ties to that general area from his days in Indiana, so it's not like he's moving to a whole new area. But you're right. He just was in real good spot there in Texas Southern.
Yeah. And I don't, again, going against Chad's legal advice, we don't like mentioning this until it's finalized, but we have here at Hoops HD put in a bid to host the 2020 Horizon League tournament.
Yeah, we're working on that. Yeah. Let's turn to, unfortunately, our colleague John Titel could not be with us for this show, but he is a big Ivy League guy being a Penn grad. And let's talk a little Ivy League hoops. And Salika, it seems like every year around this time, at least personally, I think that I look at Harvard and I say that Tommy Amaker's team, this might be a bubble team, and then they're just not there. So let's ask again, is Harvard a bubble team this year again? Should they slip up in the Ivy League tournament?
They've had some pretty decent recruiting classes, but I don't think Harvard or any of the Ivy League teams are going to be anywhere close to bubble material. I think you have to go back to 1988, the last time a team like Princeton was way above the bubble and actually got a 5 seed that year with only one loss in the regular season.
What year was that?
1998.
Oh, I thought you said 1988. I was like, I didn't think it was that long ago. Jeez. We've seen Harvard David, get a 10 seed before, but I think that's the last. I don't remember what year that was.
Obviously the Ivy League only have a tournament for a few years now. You know, talking bubble with the Ivy League has never been before recently important. But what about this idea? You know, is it Harvard? Is it somebody else? Is Penn, with a lot of players back from last year, maybe the pick to win this? Keeping in mind that the conference tournament has now moved to Yale instead of the Palestra.
Yeah. The one thing about Harvard is, lucky. I'm like you. I look at them and I'm like, they – look at all their pieces. They really should be a top 40 team or a top 40 caliber team, but it never seems to materialize. And even when they got all the way up until when league play started last year, we were like, well, you know, they struggled in November and December, but they should be okay now. If anyone's going to do it, I think it would be Penn because of, I mean, how can you go against the team that won it and that has so much coming back? But Harvard really should dominate this league.
Well, let's turn to the Metro Atlantic, and let's start with Tim Kloos's team there in Iona.
Oh,
I thought this team had a shot to take the regular season crown this year, except they had a little bit of a problem. Sleepy, you want to tell us about their problems that they had during scrimmages?
This would now be former player Roland Griffin, who apparently got into a bit of a scat with an assistant coach on the team who was getting on his case apparently about a study hall or something. But what ended up happening was they ended up having a fight in the locker room where nobody else was around and ended up with Griffin being suspended from, I think, the school for about 2 years. And he was subsequently dismissed from the team, which is obviously not going to be good for Iona, but more scary in that the assistant coach in question actually got hospitalized after the incident.
Yeah, and David, that's 11.2 points and 5.2 rebounds per game from Roland Griffin gone. So with that, is there a clear choice now in the Metro Atlantic?
I mean, doesn't it have to be Ryder? I mean, with all they have coming back and with how good they were last year, I thought it was the clear choice before this happened. Not that I didn't like Iona, but it's pretty clear to me. I mean, do you
agree? How good is this rider? Is this rider team? We have seen Atlantic teams inside the bubble before, so could they get there?
Yeah, I mean, they could. It wouldn't totally shock me. I'm not going to. If you're going to ask if they're among the teams right now that I think will make it, my answer would be no. But yeah, I mean, they certainly could.
But I think another
big wins last year.
Another program we should probably also keep an eye on is going to be Canisius, because if you look at what Reggie Witherspoon has been building up at Canisius the past couple of years, he was the one that also started to get Buffalo on the map within the past decade, but obviously never took him as far as they did last year.
Yeah, real good coach. I like him, Spoon.
I think it's worth mentioning a couple teams towards the bottom of the Metro Atlantic. First of all, quick note here, Shaheen Holloway, the new head coach at St. Peter's, with John Dunn having moved on. But I also want to talk a little bit about Manhattan and take a little bit of sidetrack.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Manhattan College had an exhibition game just two nights ago, Monday the 29th, against NIAC. It was an open exhibition. It was not a closed scrimmage, not a secret scourge or anything. But, Slika, you've been updating our exhibition tab on the website, and I saw there that the result was unknown today. And I said, unknown? We got to do a little research. Why can't we get a score? So I took the liberty of emailing Kevin Ross, who is the sports information, his official title. He is the director of sports communication and media relations over at Manhattan College.
Whatever is
the SID.
Yeah.
And the specific sports he covers, which includes men's basketball. He has a couple assistants that do some other sports. And Kevin's response, when I asked him what the score was, and maybe we could even get a box score for it, was, nope, sorry. We don't promote exhibitions nor release the box. This is Kevin Ross. Just so everybody knows, his email is kross01@manhattan.edu. If you would like to call him about the game, his phone number is 718-862-7228. Yes, that's 718-862-7228. Kevin Ross will not tell anybody what happened in this game.
That was open to the public.
And it was free to the public, too.
We can't even find anyone anywhere from the public that went to the game.
and here you see on the screen right there, NIAC at Manhattan, result unknown. Well, David and John, I've taken the liberty of fixing things. So just get right on the screen.
God. Yes. Wow. That's just...
Yeah, Manhattan had refused to disclose the score of the game.
Like, we don't want to, like, this was an open game. It was open to the public. It wasn't a closed scrimmage. So why isn't there a, like, was nobody there keeping score? No one from the media, no one from the local press, no one apparently from the team that they played went to the game. We can't find anyone that was there. My favorite part was you emailed the SID from the other school. I can't even remember the name of the school. And he said,
NIAC.
Yeah, NIAC. I the last I heard, we were down by 30.
I did get confirmation. I do not have a final score. I did get officially have confirmation that Manhattan did win the game by 30 points. I don't know the official score. I got that from NIAC. So thank you very much for that school to NIAC for that information. But again, for our purposes and for the purpose of our website, it is NIAC 2, Manhattan 0. It is a forfeit because and has refused to tell us what happened in the game, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But Mid-American Conference time. And John, let me turn to you here. We've got the MAC where Buffalo made the NCAA tournament and knocked off Arizona last year. How do the Bulls and how's the rest of the conference look to you this year?
Well, the Bulls are also going to be returning quite a bit of talent, as is Eastern Michigan in the Western Division. But I think Buffalo is going to be much better set as far as a possible at-large bid.
Oh, yeah.
It's worthy to point out they do have a home-and-home with Southern Illinois both ends this season. So they also go to West Virginia. They're also going to be part of the what's called the Belfast Hall of Fame Classic in Ireland, where they'll play Milwaukee and either Stephen F. Austin or San Francisco in the second game.
Jesus. So Ireland wants college basketball, and we send them Milwaukee and San Francisco.
At the same time, let me finish for Buffalo. They also have tests at Syracuse and Marquette to prep them for the MAC?
I'm not certain without Wes Clark exactly if Buffalo is going to be as good as they were. I am going with Eastern Michigan as my pick to win this conference. I don't necessarily think anybody's going to be inside the bubble. But on the other hand, David, I think one of the reasons why somebody's going to be in the bubble is because I think there's a lot of very good teams here that might be even between Ohio, Akron, Toledo, even a team like Ball State or Bowling Green. There is a lot of good teams, and we're going to have some great action this year.
Yeah, and it seems to be that way every year. And, you know, it's how many years have we seen a team enter conference play and we're like, oh, if they can run away from the league, they're going to land inside the bubble. But the league's too good. I mean, it's hard to go to Buffalo and win. It's hard to go to Kent and Akron and win. And at the end of the year, when you look at those teams' records, they only lose two or three games at home. So this is a hard league to run away from. And you saw how good Buffalo was last year if you watched the NCAA tournament. They didn't run away from the league last year. They won it, but I mean, they didn't blow through it.
Right. And sorry, we'll get something here. Okay. Yeah. But John, do you think that Buffalo can land inside the bubble? Is that what you're saying though?
I'm not saying they're going to land on the bubble right now, but I'm saying the chances are certainly going to be there because I don't think Eastern Michigan, if I remember correctly, had quite the number of tests on the schedule themselves.
So you're saying you don't know. All right, let's move on to the MEAC then, and let's start at the top of the MEAC before we get the most important story in the conference. But start at the top of the MEAC, and David, who even wins this conference, especially now that Hampton is gone?
Well, it went from being bad to being bad. I don't know. I do know that whoever finishes first probably won't win the conference tournament. It just seems to always work out that way. I really don't know who I like. I don't really like anybody.
North Carolina Central 9-7 in league play last year, but gets the automatic bid. I mean, they're kind of my pick right now to win the conference. John, do you have somebody else you're looking at?
Well, it's going to also be the same pick that the coaches and the SIDs did, and that's going to be Bethune-Cookman. Bethune-Cookman was also, I think, in the hunt with Savannah State last year as far as the regular season title. But
they tied for it, yes.
And ended up getting upset in the opening round of the MEAC tournament where the bracket usually cannibalizes itself.
Yeah, if I had to make a pick, it would be Cookman.
But here's the story that really matters in the MEAC, David, right there on the screen. How about the Save the Tigers campaign?
Right. Their last year in Division One, choosing to reclassify, I say they are, somebody is. Have we officially named them yet? Can we say it yet? Can we say that they're a candidate for Team of the People?
They are.
They are a candidate for Team of the People this year. A really upsetting story. You kind of get the sense, and we're going to probably dig into this more and more, was that while the university made the decision for whatever reason, there were a lot of people within athletics that didn't favor it or didn't seem to. This was a team that was in contention for first place last year all the way right up until the end. Their time in Division One, while not going to Final Fours or anything, I wouldn't say that it's been a complete failure. They had a really rough transition, but who doesn't? How can you say that this program was a failure when they did what they did last year and they've had a first place finish? They've gone to NCAA tournaments in sports like softball, and they were a contender to win this league last year. Their exhibition game the other night, it was kind of nice to see the place was half full for an exhibition game. So hopefully this team can have a big year. I know they lost a lot. Can you blame them for what they've been through?
And we've been looking into this entire story as to the decision to bring this Savannah State team down from D2 to D1, D1 down to D2, but got some very differing stories of whether it was a school decision or whether it was a decision by the Georgia Board of Regents. I actually reached out to the Georgia Board of Regents, was told it was a school decision. That's the official line. I reached out to the school, received no response whatsoever. So thank you, Savannah State, for responding to me. But I guess it's better that Manhattan was a little bit better. At least Kevin Ross got right back to me and told me he won't tell me the score within about half an hour. So,
but right. But we'll have more on this. We'll have more.
We will. And let's move on now, though, to the Missouri Valley Conference, which was the other conference of the tournament last year. We talked about UMBC at the top of the show being the 16 seed to win. Loyola Chicago in the Final Four that nobody saw coming. Salika, how about this Loyola team this year? Can they get back not to the Final Four, but to the NCAA tournament?
Well, the chances are certainly going to be there in the Valley for Loyola as far as the regular season goes. And then as far as out of conference, they're going to be part of the Fort Myers tip-off where they'll be facing Richmond in either BC or Wyoming. But in all seriousness, their biggest tests are probably going to be at home against Nevada. That's part of the Valley and the Mountain West Challenge, a game against Maryland that's going to be in Baltimore, and also a game we teased on earlier this week against St. Joe's in the Palestra.
Yeah, and David Clayton Custer is back. Cameron Crutwig is back. Marquise Towns is back. And Nevada fans, when they play each other during the regular season, I'm going to be really thrilled to see him after what he did to that. But, how good is this Loyola team?
Pretty good. I think they're good. I think this league is really good this year. I think it's a multi-bid league, not just the first-place team might be inside the bubble. I think we might see two. Because as good as I think they are and as good as I think that they – as much as I think I like their chances to end up inside the bubble, I actually like the Salukis more.
I don't
the
like
funny the thing is, I think while Loyola would probably be the one team I would say has the best chance to finish inside the bubble, I could argue that all four teams within the state of Illinois could end up going dancing at least.
I don't agree with David that Southern Illinois is better than Loyola. I do agree with David, though, that I think Southern Illinois is inside the bubble. I think this is a two-bid league. Southern Illinois is my second team. Illinois State, though, right there as well.
Yeah. And this is just a year where, you know, a lot of teams, when you go down the list, Illinois State, four starters back. Bradley, is it three or four? Like, they've got a lot of contributing players back. Valpo, unfortunately, a lot of players back.
And Ben Jacobson is still the head coach of Northern Iowa, but he's been kind of one of the last few years, so I don't know.
Right. Oh, they're fantastic in November. But anyway, I think this league is kind of at the top of its talent cycle, which is really good to see because some of the programs that have come through here in the past that are no longer a part of it, namely Creighton and Wichita State, you're like, well, will the Valley continue to have any level of success? I think the answer is yes. While they haven't put a team inside the bubble – since those two teams both left, they did put a team inside the Final Four.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good. How many Final Fours did Wichita State make since they've left?
Zero. They made one when they were there. So, like, I mean, there aren't many conferences out there, including the Powers, that have put two teams in the Final Four in the past 5 years. The Valley has. So.
Yeah. But again, Illinois State, Southern Illinois, keep an eye on both those teams, maybe even Bradley as well, as John mentioned. This should be a fun year in the Valley, at least at the top of it.
Yeah.
Let's move on. John, how about the Northeast Conference, one of our favorite leagues here over at Hoops HD?
Well, this was a conference last year where I think St. Francis PA had ended up winning the regular season, but LIU Brooklyn is actually the team that got to go to the NCAA tournament as the auto bid winner. And now Derek Kellogg will have reinforcements coming from UMass that will now be eligible this year to help him make a run at a repeat bid.
So who are you going with?
I'll go with the Blackbirds here.
You're going Blackbirds. I'm going to go with St. Francis. I think the Red Flash are the best team in this conference. Most of their roster back from last year's regular season champions. They went 12-6 in the conference. Keith Braxton, the guy they'll keep on. David, your thoughts?
I like the Blackbirds as well. But again, my thoughts are this league is always so much fun. So
it really is. I mean, Wagner had a good year last year. Fairleigh Dickinson is a team to keep an eye on as well. So lots of fun teams in this conference. Ohio Valley Conference. Belmont and Murray State, same story as always.
I think
do we have a third team in here as well that over the last few years? Maybe it's become a three-team league, actually.
Well, I think Belmont and Murray State are clearly the two best teams in the league. There's other teams worth talking about. I think Jack State certainly is very much improved over the years. They actually got in a couple years ago. Ray Harper doing a really good job there. I think he's better than everybody else, but I don't think he's good as the top two, Belmont and Murray. And it's kind of a toss-up. I tended to lean toward Belmont, but it wouldn't shock me if either one of them won it.
John, you're on the Belmont also?
You could probably flip a coin, but I think I would go with Belmont here.
Yeah, and you know, Murray State making up for the loss of Jonathan Stark, that's going to be the hardest part for them. That's why I agree with you that Belmont is there. I like Jack State. I think teams like Austin Peay and Morehead State are two teams that could be up and coming in this league also. A couple names to keep an eye on, but I don't think anybody else is in the class with those top three. I think there's a big, big gap there.
Yeah. But I think to Chad's point, Morehead's probably about a year or two away because while they did finish last in the OVC, they were actually in a number of close games last year, but weren't able to close out many of them.
Yeah, it's hard to get too excited about a team that missed the conference tournament, but we'll see what they do.
Let's turn over to the Patriot League now. And for the last four and seven of the last eight Patriot League regular season championships have all gone to the Bucknell Bison. This year, Bucknell... Patriot League Player of the Year, Nana Fallon. Former Patriot League Player of the Year, Zach Thomas. Gone. Everybody gone. In fact, there's nobody left. David, I think it's time for a change in the Patriot League. I assume you're not going Bucknell. Where are you going?
I like Holy Cross. It's hard to say. Like, they had a rough year last year, but when you look at – I know Bucknell lost a lot, but – in looking at this league, most of the league lost a lot. And I guess I just kind of favor Holy Cross based on what they have coming back. I know that that's kind of an out there pick, but I that's kind of who I'm leaning toward.
Hopefully Holy Cross doesn't have to do it the hard way like they did 3 years ago when they were the bottom seed in the Patriot League and actually ended up winning the auto bid.
Yeah.
Well, Stalika, what about teams like Lehigh or Colgate, instead of Holy Cross?
Colgate probably does have some returning talent. I don't know if it's going to be enough to pass a team like a Lehigh, which has been pretty consistent over the past 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and Lehigh is my pick here. Lance Tejada led the Patriot League in three-point shooting last season. Keep an eye on him for this Lehigh team. But I do like Lehigh to win it. I was kind of going Holy Cross as my second pick in the league, and I thought that was going out there. David, you're going them all the way at the top, so that's kind of a surprise to me. But I am going Lehigh in the Patriot League this year. Let's talk about a conference that, David, I know you've been dying to talk about, and that's the SoCon.
Yeah, two really good teams here. Greensboro, I guess you saw what they did in the winning the conference tournament last year and then really squeezing Gonzaga in that round of 64 game. And they've got a lot coming back. I like this Greensboro team. I like Wofford even more, though. And Wofford, what a first week they're having. And, again, this is kind of, if you're a fan of Under the Radar, sort of – the November and December games in a lot of ways are as big as anything because those are the games that you have to win. They've got North Carolina coming to their home court. What a scene that is going to be. I don't know if they will beat the Tar Heels, but I do think that they have a chance to really compete, and it wouldn't be completely shocking if they beat them. They beat them last year in Chapel Hill. If they get that win, and if they can get maybe one or two others, I think Wofford could end up inside the bubble.
I agree with you. Fletcher McGee, I talked earlier about if we were doing a top three or four under the radar players for this year, he would definitely be on that list. Stalika, are you going Wofford? You going Greensboro? Or you want to surprise us and go somewhere else entirely?
It wouldn't surprise me if a team like a Furman or East Tennessee were able to upset
the Apple Cart here. Wrong. go ahead.
But I probably would go with Wofford with a slight edge over Greensboro this year.
Yeah, and David, in terms of can Wofford land inside the bubble, should they slip up in the conference tournament.
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, we'll have a much better idea here in a couple of weeks, but yeah, I definitely think they can.
All right. Let's turn to the Southland Conference, a.k.a. Stephen F. Austin and about a dozen other teams. Same thing again this year?
Yeah, I always talk about Conference USA as if it's some really good teams at the top, and then the last eight teams are Southland teams. The Southland is Stephen F. Austin and then a bunch of Southland teams.
Yeah, I'm going with SFA, Sleek. Is there anybody else to even look at in this conference? I mean, I know last year there was a little bit unusual. We were following a few other teams like Southeastern Louisiana and the incredible season that Nicholls State had, but both those teams, I think, slipped down this year. Especially
Nicholls had a great season last year, and their coach, Richie Riley, actually moved on to South Alabama, so I would not be counting on Go Colonels being a thing this year.
SFA.
Our man Rocco, he was big on Nicholls before anybody else really was.
Yeah, I would say SFA.
Let's go to the player that the player, the conference, and the player that I think is the top under the radar player in the entire nation, despite the few we've mentioned already. But Mike Daum and South Dakota State over in the Summit League, David. This is another team that I'm circling as a potential to get inside the bubble. Should they slip up, and should they get the wins they need in non-conference play?
Right. The wins they need in non-conference play may be an issue. I mean, they're going to have a razor-thin margin of error, but they're good enough to win 28-29 during the regular season, I think. Certainly one of the better players, not just under-the-radar players. I mean, this guy is really good. And I think they run away from this conference. I mean, I don't know if they'll run the table, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go 17-1 or 60, whatever it is. How many teams are in this league? Okay, yeah, 15-1. Going 17-1 would be quite a feat.
Well, if they're going to harbor any at-large hopes.
Well, 1 second. First of all, 17-1 would be fine because there are nine teams in the league now that North Dakota.
Count it, conference tournament.
And also, in terms of Mike Daum, interesting story here that he did actually complete his degree last year. So he could have been a graduate transfer to any team in the nation. And probably any team would have taken him, even some of the top teams out there. And the fact that he came back was huge. But sorry, John, I cut you off.
Great first game against Grand Canyon. Sorry, John, I cut you off.
I was going to say, if they want to be an at-large team, their major test is going to be at Nevada. You probably want to win that one. You also have a game at Memphis in early December that I'll just say it right now, they do need to win.
I think they will win that one. They're better than Memphis. I know it's at Memphis, but they're gonna win at Memphis. I'm pretty sure.
Well, John, I mentioned that North Dakota is a new team in this league. We also kind of have a little bit of a – slightly have another new team in this league, at least a new name for a team. IUPU Fort Wayne no longer exists. It is now just Purdue Fort Wayne, correct?
Yeah, they were branded as Fort Wayne a couple years ago, but now it is going to be Purdue Fort Wayne, and even their logo has more Purdue-ish colors this year.
David, let's head over to the Sun Belt. Who do you like at the top of this conference this season?
Georgia State, all day long. I mean, again, they were really good last year. There was a couple really good teams in this league last year, Louisiana being another one. I like Georgia State. I think Ron Hunter's got a really good team. They're in my top 10 anyway, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they were pretty close to the bubble themselves.
I'll tell you, the team that would kind of keep an eye on as a dark horse here is, we already mentioned them, South Alabama with Richie Riley, the one he did at Nicholls last year, and he's got a lot of pieces back from last season with this USA team. But John, I do agree with you with Georgia State. What are your thoughts?
I think Georgia State does win the conference, but they'll also get some challenges from Georgia Southern and maybe another dark horse, and that would be a hot, hot, hot Appalachian State team.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't think Appalachian – I think Appalachian State actually got thrown out of the conference. That's what last I heard after their football team lost after cracking the rankings. But let's go over to the SWAC. And we could actually see it happen, David. A multiple-time winner of the Hoops HD Centenary Award for the worst team in Division I has a real shot at making the NCAA tournament this year.
They do. And what a story it would be. And again, this team was
rambling, by the way,
all kinds of hot garbage. And they were really good last year, despite not being eligible for it. It was kind of fun to see them at least get some taste of success. This year, with what they have coming back, yeah, I think they win the league. They're my pick.
And one of the things is Texas Southern has been such a force in this league. Mike Davis gone. Not many pieces left in this team either. Although they did bring in a name for their head coach, though, John, didn't they?
Yeah, that's going to be one of two schools that's going to have a reclamation project of sorts. Johnny Jones is going to be looking to resurrect his career, Texas Southern, but also keep an eye on Southern University, where Sean Woods is also going to be trying to build a program from the ground up.
And a career from the ground up, basically, after what happened to him at his last job. Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking at Grambling to win this conference. I really think they can, and it should be fun to watch. Although, David, I also would not be surprised to see about 3 Division I wins combined from the entire conference by the time we start SWAC play.
There was 1 year where the league collectively won 8 out-of-conference Div 1 games, and I never remember ever seeing a league win that few before, and I don't think I've seen one win that few since. This year might beat it.
Just one quick note on the SWAC. Don't count on Alabama A&M make the NCAA tournament. They are the lone APR band team in the NCAA this season, but they are not eligible. Yeah. Last but not least, the Western Athletic Conference, and New Mexico State, Chris Jans did a great job last year, got this team to the NCAA tournament, but not that many pieces back, only one starter returning. Is it finally time for somebody else to get this bid and win the WAC this season?
I think so. They've clearly been the class of the league. We've been picking against them the last couple of years, and they've still won it. But this year, if they win it this year, that would be very, very impressive. I still think they're just going to be a force, because they're always – I mean, they've just got so much more in terms of resources. And although they don't have returning players, they have players coming in that are better than most of the rest of the league. But I think Grand Canyon finally gets it done this year. I say finally. They've only been eligible for like a year or two.
Well, Salika, what about the Lopes? What are their chances? And do you pick them to win the WAC this season?
Well, as we saw in their inaugural WAC tournament last year, they were actually walking a bit of a tightrope where they actually had to come back to beat UMKC, and then I believe it was Seattle in the semifinal before they ended up losing to New Mexico State in the championship game. But that being said, they're getting closer and closer by the year to making their first trip to the NCAA tournament.
Couple of teams we've got to mention. Another new addition to Division I this year, starting the first of their 4 transition years, the Cal Baptist Lancers. David, how do you think our team of the people from last season will do in their first year in the WAC?
It's going to be rough. It always will be when you're playing against D1 competition for the first time. But by transitional team standards, I think they're going to do fine. Fine meaning that if they can be at 500 in 2 of their 4 years, that's going to be an incredible accomplishment.
And I got to mention this here. Every year we do give out our Centenary Award, which is our award for the worst team in Division I. Chicago State almost won it last year, or did they win it last year?
No, it was
– That would be Delaware State.
Delaware State won it last year, but Chicago State was a finalist. Actually got a win very late in the season to avoid winning it. They only won a single Division I game last year, though. They only have one starter back. They bring in Lance Irvin as their new head coach, who last year was an assistant coach in high school basketball in Chicago. They are my front runner for this year's Centenary Award, David.
Yeah. Things just not going well at Chicago State. They're hurting as an institution. They're hurting certainly as an athletic department. Probably more important as an institution. I'm glad the school remained open, and I don't say that facetiously or backhandedly. Like, there, I think it serves an important a demographic that needs to be served, and it would have been a shame had it closed. I would just like to see them experience some level of success, any level. Wow, but things could be going better.
Well, we do have an under-the-radar top 10. I don't have it on the screen this week. I just have it on a piece of paper, so let me run through it real quick. David Nideland was voted. David completely forgot that the Missouri Valley Conference is considered
correct. And I noticed, I realized that when we got to the...
Kind of skew the results a bit. But so let's start with that. Not in the rankings here. Our three Missouri Valley Conference teams that probably should be Loyola, Chicago, Southern Illinois, and Illinois State. I'm just going to leave them off of that list because David forgot to vote for them.
No, let's put them in. I voted in 1, 2, 3.
Those are 1A, 1B, 1C, and at 1D is Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
We also have the rest of the list here. Number 2 is South Dakota State. 3rd is Wofford. 4th is Georgia State. Then we have Buffalo, Wright State, UC Irvine, Northeastern, Lipscomb, Harvard, also receiving votes, Grand Canyon. That is our under-the-radar preseason top 10 list. As you can see, it's well, let's ask this question here. How many team – well, let me ask this question to both of you. Are we going to see any at-large bids from any of these 22 conferences that we discussed? And if so, how many total do you see coming in from these 22 conferences this year? John, let me ask you that first.
Well, with conferences like the Big East and possibly the Big 10 or Big 12 being a little bit down, there may be a window for, I think, one at-large bid out of the under-the-radar conferences. But I think it's going to be Conference USA that actually ends up getting multiple bids.
So you don't think the Valley puts multiple teams in?
Probably not. I'm probably going to go with Loyola, but wouldn't be surprised to see a Southern Illinois or Illinois State make the field either.
David, my thoughts are that we are going to end up seeing two under-the-radar at-large bids this year. I think one will come from the Valley. I think the other is going to come from an upset in a conference tournament and somebody like a Western Kentucky, somebody like maybe a team from the Colonial or even a Wofford or a South Dakota State sneaking in. But what are your thoughts?
I could see it being two or three, and I know three is optimistic, but you almost have to ask yourself, not so much at large bids, but who's going to be inside the bubble? And I think Loyola will be. I think Southern Illinois will be. I think Wofford's got a chance, depending on what they do here in the first couple of weeks, and it really is going to depend on that. South Dakota State, if they can run through their schedule, might end up inside the bubble, but Like if they don't win at Nevada, which they probably won't, they probably need to win just about all the rest. Three is probably where I place the over-under, but I'm probably going to take the under and think it's more like two. And it's a good question, Chad. And like, if you didn't listen, we actually talked to David Warlock a bit about this, more so off the air than what actually got into the show, but these teams, under the radar, in order to get an at-large bid or in order to get on that first ballot, you have to win games that impress the committee. And when you're in a conference with teams where none of them would impress the committee, then you're basically in a situation where you have to do it at the beginning of the season. You have about a six-week window, and you have to take the games that you can get, and they're hard to get on favorable terms. I think you saw last year Loyola in particular played four games in 8 days on opposite ends of the country, and none of them were at home. But that's what you have to do to get these games. And then even if you win those, then you're in a situation where you get in the conference play, and the best you can hope for is to not ruin it. Like, there's nothing to play for. There's no, oh, big game, this is going to put us over the top. It's, geez, I hope I don't stub my toes. And it's hard to get up for 18 games when all you're trying to do is not lose so you don't ruin it. It's hard for under-the-radar teams to get inside the bubble. Will this new net ranking, the NET, count for that a little more than maybe the RPI did? Will the committee be a little more tuned into it than they were in the past? I can say with confidence that at least David Warlock seemed to be aware of the issue.
We saw this come up with Monmouth, I think, 3 to 4 years ago, where they certainly were stockpiling significant wins earlier in the year, but
right.
What ended up doing them in was, I think, too many sub-200 or even sub-250 RPI losses, which negated those wins.
It did, but that really bugged me that Monmouth team didn't get in because they lost – I don't know. Again, it's so hard to do. Hey, Chad, were you about to say something?
Well, I also think it's going to be interesting to watch what happens with Conference USA. If Conference USA can get that large bid that may be directly attributable to this new scheduling format, is this a format we could see some of these other larger conferences go to? I know a conference like the Ivy League that is going to play a full double round robin doesn't make sense for it, but you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with CUSA with this new scheduling alliance that they have as well.
Yeah.
And how that plays into at-large bids.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, let's go to any other final thoughts for the evening. And Sleeka, let me start with you.
Well, the puppet had asked for it earlier, and now I'm going to be happy to deliver. He was talking about players for his under-the-radar all-name team. Look no further than Belmont Abbey and starting forward, thank God Avar is who he's thinking of.
Thank God Avar.
Yep, 14 minutes of play, 3 fouls, 2 turnovers in their exhibition game against Campbell.
Well, at least you get stats on that as we once again give another shout out to the Manhattan's SID. David, your final thoughts for the night.
No, because that was going to be my final thought, what I said about how hard it is for under-the-radar teams to land inside the bubble.
So no other thoughts. I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us for our under-the-radar and all of our preseason podcasts we've had so far. We will have one more coming up. We'll be recording it on Monday, November 5th, so you'll be able to see it on that first, probably on Tuesday the 6th, the first day of the season. Take the day off of work. Go and vote in the morning, watch our podcast, then watch games all day. But that last podcast, we'll be doing a preseason bracket that we'll be revealing, as well as officially announcing our team of the people for the 2018-19 season.
Who's it going to be, Chad?
Can you give me who it might be. Who's it's going to be Duke.
Oh, okay.
Duke.
Why them?
Why not? They don't have any fans, do they? Right. On that note, on behalf of John Sleeka, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you.